Chapter 22. In some respects, Mrs. Courtney, it was possibly all to the good that we were unable to contact you before. The Surgeon Major tamped tobacco into his pipe and began methodically searching all his pockets. "Your matches are on the desk," Ada came to his assistance. "Oh, thank you." He got the pipe drawing and continued. "You see, your son was attached to an irregular unit. There was no record of next of kin. And when he came to us from Colenso 6 weeks ago, he was, shall we say, in no condition to inform us of your address." "Can we see Pa now?" Dirk could no longer contain himself. For the past 5 minutes he had wriggled and fidgeted on the couch beside Ada. "You will see your father in a few minutes, young man." And the surgeon turned back to Ada. "As it so happens, Mrs. Courtney, you have been spared a great deal of anxiety. At first there were grave doubts that we would be able to save your son's life, let alone his right leg. 4 weeks it hung in the balance, so to speak. But now," and he beamed at Ada with justifiable pride, "well, you'll see for yourself." "He's well?" quickly, anxiously, she asked. "What a formidable constitution your son has, all muscle and determination." He nodded, still smiling. "Yes, he's well on the road to recovery. There may be a slight limp in the right leg, but when you weigh that against what might have been..." He spread his hands eloquently. "Now, the sister will take you through to him." "When can he come home?" Ada asked from the doorway. "Soon. Another month, perhaps." A deep veranda, cool with shade and the breeze that came in across the hospital lawns. 100 high metal beds along the wall, 100 men in grey flannel nightshirts, propped against white pillows. Some of them slept. A few were reading. Others talked quietly or played chess and cards on boards set between the beds. But one lay withdrawn, staring at, but not seeing, the pair of fiscal shrikes which squabbled raucously over a frog on the lawn. The beard was gone, removed while he was too weak to protest on the orders of the ward sister, who considered it unhygienic, and the result was a definite improvement that even Sean secretly admitted. Shielded for so long, the skin on the lower half of his face was smooth and white like that of a boy. 15 years had been shaved away with that coarse black mat. Now emphasis was placed on the heavy brows, which in turn directed attention to his eyes, dark blue, like cloud shadow on mountain lakes. Darker blue at this moment as he considered the contents of the letter he held in his right hand. The letter from Saul was 3 weeks old, and already the cheap paper was splitting along the creases from constant refolding. It was a long letter, much of it devoted to detailed description of the clumsy sparring along the Tugela River, in which Buller's army was now engaged. There was one reference to the headaches from which the writer periodically suffered as a result of his wound, which was now externally healed, and many more to the deep gratitude that Saul felt for him. These embarrassed Sean so much that when rereading the letter he scowled and skipped each one as he came to it. But there was one paragraph to which Sean returned each time, and read slowly, whispering it to himself, so that he could savour each word. "I remember telling you about Ruth, my wife. As you know, she escaped from Pretoria, and is in Pietermaritzburg staying with relatives of hers. Yesterday I had a letter from her that contained the most wonderful tidings. We have been married 4 years this coming June, and now at last, as a result of our brief meeting when she arrived in Natal, I am to become a father. Ruth tells me she has determined on a daughter, though I am certain it will be a son. And she has selected a name. It is a most unusual name. To be charitable, I can see that it will require a great deal of diplomacy on my part to make her change her mind. Among her many virtues is an obstinacy reminiscent of the Rock of Ages. She wants to name the poor waif Storm. Storm Friedman, and the prospect appalls me. Although our faiths differ, I have written to Ruth asking her to agree to your election as Sandek, which is the equivalent of godfather. I can foresee no objection from Ruth, especially in view of the debt which we both owe you, and it needs now only your consent. Will you give it? At the same time, I have explained to Ruth your present situation and address, care of Gray's Hospital, Pietermaritzburg, and asked her to visit you there so that she can thank you personally. I warn you in advance that she knows as much about you as I do. I am not one to hide my enthusiasms. Lying with the letter clutched in his hand, Sean stared out across the lawns into the sunlight. Beneath the bedclothes, swelling up like a pregnant belly, was the wicker basket that cradled his leg. "Storm," he whispered, remembering the lightning playing blue and blinding white upon her body. "Why doesn't she come?" 3 weeks he had waited for her. "She knows that I'm here. Why doesn't she come to me?" "Visitors for you?" The sister paused beside him and straightened the bedclothes. "Who?" He struggled up onto his good elbow, with the other arm still in its sling across his chest. "A lady," and he felt it surge through him. "And a small boy." The cold backwash of disappointment, as he realized it was not her. Then immediately guilt. Ada and Dirk. How could he hope it was someone else? Without the beard, Dirk did not recognize him until he was 10 paces away. Then he charged. His cap flew from his head, and his dark hair, despite the bonds of brilliantine, sprang up into curls as he ran. He was squeaking incoherently as he reached the bed, clambered up onto Sean's chest to lock both arms around his neck. It was some time before Sean could prise him loose and look at him. "Well, boy," he said, and then again, "Well, my boy." Unable to trust himself not to lay his love for the child bare for all to see, there were 100 men watching and grinning, Sean sought diversion by turning to Ada. She waited quietly, as she had spent half her lifetime waiting. But when he looked at her, the tenderness showed in her smile. "Sean," she stooped to kiss him, "what happened to your beard? You look so young." They stayed for an hour, most of which was taken up by a monologue from Dirk. In the intervals while he regained his breath, Ada and Sean were able to exchange all their accumulated news. Finally, Ada stood up from the chair beside Sean's bed. "The train leaves in half an hour, and Dirk has school tomorrow. We'll come up from Ladyburg each weekend until you are ready to return home." Getting Dirk out of the hospital was like evicting an unruly drunk from a bar. Alone, Ada could not manage it, and she enlisted a male hospital orderly to the cause. Kicking and struggling in tantrum, Dirk was carried down the veranda with his screams ringing back to Sean long after he had disappeared from view. "I want my dad! I want to stay with my dad!"